Rafael Nadal has won the men's singles title at the French Open 8 times. That tournament is underway this weekend, and if, but only if, Nadal wins it again, he'll have more French men's singles championships than any other player. If you find that hard to believe, it's because you are unfamiliar with Max Decugis. In case that's so, Chris Clary, who writes about tennis for the New York Times, joins me to remedy the situation. Chris, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks very much. Yeah, Max could use some publicity about now. I don't think he's gotten much recently.
So. Well, Max began winning French championships in 1903. He won 7 more of them over the next decade or so. But it would not be accurate to call him the French Open champion, right? Why is that?
It's because the French, unlike Wimbledon, which was the other, you know, great, great tournament of the era, it didn't allow non-French club players to play for a long time. And so they started that in 1925, which was after Max's career was over. And so Max played almost all of his matches at the French Championships against French players instead of an international field. But Max is in all of the lists here in France. He's considered a French champion, just like Nadal is. No one has won as many titles as Nadal at Roland Garros since the tournament moved to that site or in the Open era.
What made Mr. Decugis so formidable as a player?
Well, first of all, he looked cool. He had the kind of the Gatsby-esque look. I mean, the hair was darker, but he had the, you know, the black hair and the part down the middle all slicked back and that kind of look. But he was one of the first real attacking players from France anyway. Big serve, big overhead. He won titles at Wimbledon as a junior, and he won Wimbledon doubles title as well, and all his French titles. He won 29 altogether, if you count the doubles. Olympic medals as well. He played with Suzanne Lenglen, La Divine, who was probably the biggest women's tennis star, perhaps, you know, of the pre-war era at all, pre-World War II, huge star. And she was a real drawing card, and she played with Decugis when she was just 15 years old and won the French mixed doubles title. So Max was a real formidable figure in a very elite sport that had a reduced audience in those years, but he was considered kind of the first great French men's tennis player.
Decugis played well before the era of steroids or even amphetamines, but you have discovered that he may have partaken at least once in a kind of performance enhancer. Tell us about that occasion.
One of his tormentors was a dashing New Zealander named Tony Wilding, who won 4 Wimbledon titles and was really the best player of this era in a lot of ways. Wilding often got the best of Decugis, and they were playing in Brussels in 1911, and there are 2 different versions of this. What's clear is that Max lost the first 2 sets, 6-love, 6-love. I have read and heard that he was down 5-love in the 3rd set, and I've also read that he was down 5-4 in the 3rd set. Either way, he was down a lot. And then he managed to reverse the situation and win the match, 7-5, 6-love, 6-love. So he reeled off a bunch of games in a row, shocking result. And he later confessed to a French chair umpire who reported this later to the French press that he felt like he might have been the very first case of doping in tennis because, unbeknownst to him, the chair umpire in that match had given him a little fruit to eat on the changeover. And it turned out to have been a Kula nut, which was full of caffeine, evidently. I think he felt, you know, maybe in his conscience was a little bit trouble anyway, but it makes for a better story. So he was—he may have been the first doper, even though caffeine is not illegal now in sport, but he might have felt that his conscience, he'd violated the spirit of it or something.
I don't know how popular tennis was in France in the early 1900s. Was Max Decugis a celebrity?
Well, if you go back and read the sporting press of the day, very prominent guy, but look at the crowds that watched the early French championships, they were very small. And in fact, sometimes on the women's side of things, they wouldn't even need to win a match to win the title. There's even cases of 3 or 4 people entering a tournament on the women's side and then having defaults or withdrawals and somebody kind of getting a walkover to the title. I think Max had to work a bit harder than that, but I can say that in 1907 in the final, he played a man named Gauthier and he won the final by the score of 6-love, 6-love, 6-love. Which you could almost see Nadal doing in his prime, but that tells you something right there. And I think the crowds in the early years were quite small, but it did build momentum, and the arrival of Lenglen and the right before the war and then especially after the war when Lenglen became such a big star on the women's side. And then the Musketeers came along, Lacoste and Barotra, Cochet and Brugnon, and they won the Davis Cup and beat Bill Tilden and Billy Talbert in the U.S. That's when tennis really took off in France and became a huge sport.
Well, let's jump forward a century and more. Do you like Rafael Nadal's chances of moving past Mr. Decugis by winning this year's French Open?
We need to ask Rafa if he knows Max Decugis, first of all, and find out whether he knows this is what his big challenge is this year or not. Some of the other French players don't know much about him, but I mean, you can't really pick against Rafa until somebody does it. He's only lost 1 match at Roland Garros in his entire life. He's won 8 titles. Only man to beat him was Robin Söderling when Rafa had sore knees back in 2009, and it's hard to visualize him losing. But I think he really is a little vulnerable this year. He's had his weakest clay court season, you know, in his prime coming in, lost three times on clay, twice to Spaniards, Almagro and Ferrer, and then he was beaten by Djokovic in the final in Rome. So he's a bit down this year compared to some previous years. But he has such fighting spirit, and he appears to be building. So I would personally, if I had to put my hand over the fire, I'd put him as co-favorite with Novak Djokovic, and I think those two will fight it out.
Christopher Clary writes about tennis for the New York Times, and you can find a link to his story about Max de Cugis at onlyagame.org. Chris, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Merci, Bill.
If you missed Only a Game's 20th anniversary celebration extravaganza at the Somerville Theater on May 12th or our broadcast of that last weekend, please don't fret. Just mosey on over to onlyagame.org. You'll find my interviews with New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft, former Major League pitcher and current bat and winemaker Bill Spaceman Lee, former poet laureate Robert Pinsky, and our own Charlie Pierce, as well as some cool photos. Visit onlyagame.org and experience the next best thing to being there.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Eton, offering the American Red Cross radio line, a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel, now at Radio Shack. And the Music Emporium, for 45 years, offering collectible boutique and vintage acoustic guitars, themusicemporium.com. This is NPR.